The Star of Bethlehem, What Was It? By Robert C. Newman, Biblical Theological Seminary. What was the Star of Bethlehem? There have been a lot of suggestions over the centuries. Many people think it was purely natural phenomenon, perhaps a comet, like Halley's Comet or some other unknown comet, perhaps a planetary conjunction when two planets appear close together in the sky, even though, of course, they're far apart, actually, out in space. Possibly a supernova, an exploding star. Others have thought it was purely supernatural, something like an angel, a bright light in the sky, or something like the Shekinah glory, the pillar of cloud and the fire that led the Israelites in the wilderness, or perhaps some other kind of supernatural bright light. Was it natural? Well, if it was natural, then we could ask the question, do we have other historical references to it? If it were perhaps a conjunction, could we reenact it with a computer? But the problem for a natural view is that if the object was at astronomical distances, it won't fit Matthew's account of guiding the Magi to the right location. So others have suggested it was supernatural. Some kind of localized bright light in the sky could easily lead the Magi to the right place. However, it's not likely that such an object would leave extra-biblical traces in the historical record, since being local, it would have not have been seen by any but those that happened to be out in that area, and the likelihood that that would have left another record would not be high. A third possibility is that it was a hybrid of some sort, and that's what we're going to propose here, a phenomenon that was partly natural and partly supernatural. We're going to suggest a model for the Star of Bethlehem that leaves us something to investigate 2,000 years later and also fits a straightforward reading of Matthew's account. What kind of hybrid? Well, we're going to propose a modification of Ernest Martin's interpretation, a series of planetary and stellar conjunctions, that was his interpretation, as we'll see in a bit, to which we're going to add a localized bright object, which would have been seen by the Magi as the same star, and which leads them to where the baby Jesus is. So we're going to look here first at the natural part and investigate that fairly thoroughly, and then come back and propose the supernatural part. So the natural part, a series of planetary and stellar conjunctions. Now, trying to figure out where planets are in the sky has been calculated for some centuries now, but is a rather tough calculation. Johann Kepler, we think, is the earliest person to have done something like this around 1600. The calculation is very tedious when done by hand, but the development of electronic computers in the 20th century has made calculations of this sort much, much easier. In 1962, the American Philosophical Society published Bryant Tuckerman's Computer Tables, Planetary, Lunar, and Solar Positions, 601 BC to AD 1, and then a supplementary volume that carried on to 600 AD, I believe. So for the first time, locations, tables showing where the various sun, moon, and the various planets would be located were available. Roger Sinnott, who became an important writer for Sky and Telescope magazine later, looked through Tuckerman's tables to find all the close planetary conjunctions occurring near the time of the birth of Jesus, giving a liberal range for when Jesus' birth might have been. Among these, he found one very close conjunction of the planets Venus and Jupiter in the constellation Leo on the evening of 17 June 2 BC. Such a conjunction, he calculated, would happen less than once every 1,000 years. Sinnott's research is diagrammed here in this picture taken from the magazine Sky and Telescope, where we see the constellation Regulus with a drawing of a lion around it, sort of a traditional way of showing constellations. The brightest star in the constellation Alpha Alpha Leonis is shown here to the lower right in the picture with the label Regulus under it. And two conjunctions that Sinnott noted are shown here on either side of Regulus a conjunction of Venus and Jupiter on August 12, 3 BC, to the upper right of Regulus, and a closer conjunction on June 7, 2 BC, to the lower left of Regulus. We circle that one, as we will come back and say a good deal more about it. Roger Sennett publishes results in the December 1968 issue of the magazine Sky and Telescope, which was then the premier journal or magazine for amateur stargazers. His suggestion has been adopted as a Christmas program at many planetariums all over the world. Some years later, Ernest Martin, in his book The Star That Astonished the World, 1991, noticed that within a year of Sennett's conjunction, there were several other conjunctions, usually involving one or both of these planets. Martin suggested that the symbolism of these conjunctions would have been such that it would have brought the Magi to Jerusalem to look for a newborn king of the Jews. Here's a table of Martin's conjunctions. let's quickly run through them. 12 August 3 BC, this was the one shown on the right in Sennett's chart. Conjunction of Venus and Jupiter, and then over in the right we have the spacing of the two as observed from the Earth at their closest approach, 4.3 minutes of arc. A minute of arc is a 60th of a degree of arc, and a degree of arc, the angles are measured in degrees in the sky as well as we measure them here down on Earth too. So 306 degrees for a whole circle, 90 degrees for a right angle and such. Basically about 4/60ths, or about 1/15th of a degree. The apparent width in the sky as viewed from the Earth of the Sun and of the Moon, which are both about the same size, is about 30 minutes of arc. So this would be something like, 1/5th or 1/6th of the size of the one of them in the sky. So a pretty close conjunction. Next, a conjunction 30 August 3 BC of Mercury and Venus with a spacing of 22 minutes. Then on 11 September 3 BC, the Sun and the Moon configure in Virgo. I wouldn't probably call them quite a conjunction, and so I don't put a spacing on it. We'll look at that in a bit. And then 14 September 3 BC, the first of three conjunctions between Jupiter and the brightest star in Leo, Regulus. And one in 14 September, one 17 February in 2 BC, and then one in 8 May, 2 BC. And then 17 June, 2 BC, a Venus-Jupiter conjunction again, but a very close one, 0.5 or half a minute of arc. This is Ernest Martin's estimate of that. We'll see a little disagreement on just how close that might have been. And then in 26 August, 2 BC, a conjunction of Mars and Jupiter, at about 7 minutes of arc. Well, we won't look at each one of these then. The region of the sky we're talking about is shown here on this piece of a sky chart. You can see in the lower right-hand side, the Milky Way shown as kind of a blue wavy cloud down there. The constellation Leo the Lion is up there with the white ellipse around it, and the constellation Virgo the Virgin right next to it with the here yellow ellipse around it shows you location of the sky. Well, Martin's first conjunction, 12 August 3 BC between Venus and Jupiter. Martin investigates how this would have been understood by astrologers in the Babylonian Greco-Roman world at that time. The Greco-Roman astrology had been borrowed basically from the Babylonians, and we think the Magi came from the Babylon area. We don't know exactly where they came from. But Martin suggests that this first conjunction, Jupiter the king planet, having left the Sun, the supreme father, is now joined with Venus, the mother. So conjunction between the king planet and the mother. He points out also that the Sun, Moon, Mercury, the messenger, are also with Venus and Jupiter in the constellation Leo the Lion, and he suggests that Leo represents the tribe of Judah. So far as I know, ancient astrology doesn't have any specific identification of Leo the Lion with Judah. However, the Bible has a strong connection between Judah and the Lion, and the Bible had been known in the area of Babylon for some 600 years by the time the Magi show up. The Jews had been sent into exile in of Babylon in 587 BC, and the exile had ended about 50 years later in 537. But many Jews stayed in Babylon, and it was an important area of Jewish population even as late as 500 AD. So for about 1,000 years, an important area of Jewish settlement. So Martin suggests that Leah represents the tribe of Judah. So his interpretation then is that some important royal event is to happen in Judah, king, planet, mother, etc. Probably some kind of birth. Huh? Well, here's a star chart again, showing just with a stick-out line the constellation Leo, and the conjunction of 12 August 3 BC would be where that four-pointed star has been put on there. Martin's conjunction number 2, 31 August 3 BC, is a conjunction between Mercury and Venus, and here Martin points out that Mercury, which was viewed as a heavenly messenger, having left the sun, now arrives at Venus, the mother. The sun is now moved over into Virgo, the virgin. God's message, says Martin, is sent to the mother. Well, here's that same star chart, but showing now the conjunction of Mercury and Venus over to the left from where the previous one was, Mercury and Venus, 31 August, 3 BC. Martin's conjunction number 3, 11 September, 3 BC, sun and moon in Virgo. The vision of the woman about to give birth in Revelation chapter 12, verses 1 through 5, can easily be understood astrologically to mark an exact date, that is a specific date, each year, slightly variable each year, but pretty close to the same. If the woman is taken to be the constellation Virgo, the Virgin, then the sun clothes her body for about 1 month each year. Let's take a look at that passage in Revelation 12. Here it is. A great and wondrous sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and a crown of 12 stars on her head. She was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on his head. His tail swept a third of the stars out of the sky and flung them to the earth. The dragon stood in front of the woman who was about to give birth, so that he might devour her child the moment it was born. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who will rule all the nations with a rod scepter, and her child was snatched up to God and to his throne. So Martin's suggestion is that this is actually, this vision in Revelation is actually picturing an event in the sky. And so the sun clothes Virgo for about 1 month each year. The moon passes through Virgo each month, so that in that particular month when the sun is clothing Virgo, the moon is just under Virgo's feet one particular day. In 3 BC, that day is September 11th, and Martin takes this to be the date of Jesus' birth. Here's a star chart, again with the artistic drawings of the different figures in the sky. And here's Virgo here to the just the left of the middle, and the sun would be about there on September 11th, and the moon down there under her feet. So that would be what that configuration would look like. Martin's conjunctions 4, 5, and 6 are the three that occur between Jupiter and Regulus on 14 September 3 BC, 17 February 2 BC, and 8 May 2 BC. Three conjunctions of Jupiter with Regulus, the brightest star in Leo, located between the lion's feet. Martin notes the prediction in Genesis 49:10. It looks like this. Jacob is talking to his assembled grown sons. Jacob is about to die, and he's giving kind of a prophetic last will and testament to his sons. And he says to his son Judah, "You are a lion's club, O Judah, a lion's cub, O Judah. You return from the prey, my son, like a lion who crouches and lies down, like a lioness who dares to rouse him. The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he comes to whom it belongs, and the obedience of the nations is his." So Martin notes that this between his feet, etc., very nicely fits the location of Regulus, which is right between the feet of Leo the Lion. We can see that now in this chart for Martin's conjunctions 4, 5, and 6. So Martin sees these three conjunctions as Jupiter, the king planet, circling Regulus, the king star, and placing a crown on him. The brown line I've shown there for you shows in a somewhat exaggerated way, it would be more flattened, the movement of Jupiter relative to Regulus on this particular year. Martin's conjunction 7, 17 June 2 BC, between Jupiter and Venus, is a very rare, very close conjunction, with the minimum separation between Venus and Jupiter variously estimated to be about 3 minutes mark, Roger Sennett, a half minute, Ernest Martin, and a tenth of a minute, Carroll. The frequency of such a close conjunction, depending on which estimate is right, would range from once in 1150 years for Sennett to once in about 34,000 years, Carroll. Martin sees this conjunction number 7 as having the same significance as that of 12 August 3 BC, some important royal event to happen in Judah. Given at the 31st August conjunction of Messenger and Mother, this is presumably a birth, huh? Martin suggests that this conjunction, the close conjunction in June, also sends the Magi on their way, and that they arrive in Jerusalem about December 25th. Here's a chart of Martin's conjunction number 7, same area of the sky. And there, the four-point star shows the location of the close conjunction of Jupiter and Venus. Martin's conjunction number 8, 26 August 2 BC, a close conjunction of Jupiter and Mars, that is the planet representing war in the sky, in the constellation Leo, with Venus and Mercury also in Leo, and the Sun in Virgo. Martin suggests this sign may mean that these events will lead to war. Well, in the course of a number of years in my teaching a course at the Biblical Seminary, I've gone over with my students with the Matthew 2 passage, and over that time period I noticed several things about these conjunctions that suggest some modifications of Martin's view. When these particular changes are made, the symbolism of the conjunction snaps into focus in a remarkable way. When I first noticed this, I had trouble sleeping that night. Let's have a look. Here are my suggestions. Martin's 11 September birth event, the moon clothing Virgo with the sun clothing Virgo with the moon under feet, comes only 2 weeks after the 31 August conjunction in which God's messenger comes to the mother. But this 31 August event sounds much more like the angel Gabriel's annunciation to Mary. And that's hardly going to be just 2 weeks before the birth, when Mary would obviously have realized she was pregnant. Suppose, then, that we take the 11 September event of the sun in Virgo and the moon under feet to be the conception instead of the birth. Well, if we do that, then the really close conjunction of 17 June is just 9 months later. The 17 June date thus makes best sense as Jesus' birth, which is, after all, what Matthew 1 and 2 with the visit of the Magi and such, is all about. This arrangement will give a different flavor to the three conjunctions of Jupiter with Regulus, the brightest star in Leo, as the baby Jesus is in Mary's womb during this period. Thus, Jupiter can be seen as God hovering over him. The interesting thing about that is that the star named Regulus, the brightest star in Leo, is in fact the Latin diminutive of Rex, and it means little king. So God is hovering over the little king. We move on to the 26 August 2 BC massing of planets, all the ancient planets but Saturn between Leo and Venus, with Mars showing up for the first time. That may indeed imply war, as Martin suggests. If we assume that the Magi set up from Babylon at the close conjunction of 17 June, as Martin suggests, they would have 70 days to get to Judea by this 26 August massing of planets, and that is not impossible. So my scheme looks like this. A few dates adjusted to fit my planetarium program didn't really turn out to matter. 12 August 3 BC, Jupiter, the king planet, joins with Venus, the mother, in Leo. An important royal event, a birth, is about to occur in Judo. 26 August 3 BC, Mercury, the heavenly messenger, comes to Venus, the mother, the Annunciation. 11 September 3 BC, the sun clothes the body of the Virgin while the moon is under her feet, the conception of the child. 14 September, 17 February, 8 May, now 2 BC, Jupiter, the king planet, hovers over Regulus, the little king, who is in his mother's womb. June 17, 2 BC, the rare close conjunction of Jupiter with Venus in Leo, almost exactly the same distance east of Regulus that the earlier 12 August conjunction was west, the birth, the Magi set out for Judea. 12 August, 2 BC, the clustering of Sun, Moon, Jupiter, Venus, Mercury, and Mars. This means war. The Magi arrive, and Herod moves to kill the baby Jesus. Well, that's my scheme, an interesting symbolism there that works very well with the picture of Jesus' birth. How rare is this event we're looking at? Well, it depends primarily on the separation of Venus and Jupiter at their closest on 17 June 2 BC, as that would be the rarest event. Roger Sinnott, with a separation of 3 minutes arc, puts this as once in 1154 years. Martin, at 0.5 minutes, would be once in once in 6,923 years, and Carroll, 0.1 minute, once in 34,615 years. However, there's another event that's somewhat rare that needs to be factored into this, and that is this triple conjunction of Jupiter with Regulus. When we take that into account, that is a probability of 0.03, loop that Jupiter makes in the sky as the Earth passes Jupiter going around in our orbit is 11 degrees wide and 11 spaced around 360 degree circle is 0.03. So with that brought in, with Sinnott spacing, we get the rarity of the combined event once in 38,000 years. Martin, once in 228,000 years. Carroll, once in 1,142,000 years. In any of the three cases, no more than once in what we would normally call human history. How prominent is the event? Well, the two planets, Venus and Jupiter, are the brightest in the sky after the Sun and Moon. But the event does take place near the Sun, so perhaps it was only noticed by experts. When I ran this on my newer planetarium program, it does show the sky being dark, however, by the time the close approach takes place, so it might have been noticed by more than experts. The conjunction, however, is a very close one. How close? Suppose we imagine we're standing 20 feet from a wall on which we project two dots that are spaced at the spacing of these of this conjunction. So we're 20 feet away, two dots. In Sinnott's model, the two dots are a fifth of an inch apart. In Martin's model, they are a 30th of an inch apart. In Carroll's model, they are 150th of an inch apart. If we ask how close are they relative to the size of the planets, with Sinnott, the planets are a few widths apart. With Martin, they are near touching or overlapping. With Carroll, they are overlapping. In my program, Starry Night, this is what it looks like, with Jupiter there in the middle and Venus to the left below it. And you can see that and we get a spacing here of about a half of a minute, which is Martin's number, that at this closest approach, Venus appears to be much closer to Jupiter than Jupiter's four bright moons are, Europa, Ganymede, Io, and Callisto, shown here. The symbolism and order are pretty spectacular. The 12 August 3 BC conjunction would say something like, Magi, pay attention, a royal birth in Judah. 26 August 3 BC, the heavenly messenger informs the mother. 11 September 3 BC, the conception occurs. The triple conjunction over that winter, God hovers over the little king. 17 June 2 BC, the birth occurs. 28 August to BC, this means war. For those of us who are into Christian evidences and apologetics, this sequence can easily be reconstructed 2,000 years later by anyone with a home computer with a planetarium program. My Starry Night program is one of the more expensive ones. It cost about $150, but planetarium programs can be got much cheaper than that, and in fact, I got one that was a shareware program some years earlier that all of them show these sorts of things. Huh? The apologetic value is enormous. This very close, very rare conjunction occurs right around, as best we can tell historically, the time of the birth of Jesus, which we do not know, closer than a few years, and that it has this symbolism. Rare close conjunction of the brightest planets in the constellations of the Lion and the Virgin. The Lion standing for Judah. People who don't even know the Bible are perhaps aware of that from from the Aslan in the Narnia Chronicles, and of course the Virgin, striking constellation as well. And yet both these constellations existed and had those names before any of these events took place. The sequence fits the events as reported in the Gospels, and this name of the star, Regulus, the little king. Woo. Well, that's the natural part. We turn to the supernatural part, a localized light in the sky that guides the Magi. The problem with a purely natural view is seen in the account Matthew 2:9, where Matthew says, "After hearing the king, they, the Magi, went their way, and the star which they had seen in the east went on before them until it came and stood over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy." Well, the problem with a purely natural view is that objects at astronomical distances, such planetary conjunctions, cannot guide someone to explicit places on the Earth by mere movement alone. Guidance by movement is characteristic of objects that are only a few tens of feet above the ground, like the pillar of cloud and fire in the wilderness. Martin's solution to this is to try and take the term came and stood in a technical sense for Jupiter stopping its westward movement and beginning to move east relative to the stars. All of the outer planets, the planets beyond us, as you view them in the sky, they appear to move eastward through the planets, through the stars, along the ecliptic, etc., except for the brief period when the Earth overtakes them in its own orbit, and then they shift back and move in a westward direction for a brief time, and then turn and move east again. And how long that takes and how far they move will vary depending on the particular planet. So basically, Martin is saying, well, Jupiter had been moving westward at this point, and now it begins to move east relative to the stars. However, this is nothing that one would notice by watching Jupiter that night. That's something you would only notice by watching Jupiter over the course of many nights. And that suggests to me that this is not really the right solution. The Magi's extreme joy is hard to understand. Notice how that went in the passage. When they saw the star, verse 10, that they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. If a Bormander has another kind of solution in his article, The Star of the Magi, in the old 1939 edition of the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. He was aware of a legend in Bethlehem that one of the Magi saw the star reflected in the bottom of the well at the inn, meaning that the star was straight overhead. Well, we have no evidence from any other reports that the star would have been straight overhead. But this is a rather clever suggestion. You know, the star is over the place because you can see it reflected in the deep well. But it doesn't do justice to the account in Matthew where the star moved and came and stood over the place. These guys, after all, are observers of the sky, and they're not going to be tricked by moving around on the ground and that something appears to move overhead just because they're moving. remember the Magi's reaction. I put it up for you on the screen again here so you can see it. After hearing the king, they went their way, and the star which they had seen in the east went on before them till it came and stood over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. That's almost the strongest way you can put joy in the Greek language. They rejoiced, okay? They rejoiced exceedingly. They rejoiced with joy. They rejoiced with great joy, etc. So piled up four rejoicings, if you like, in the particular remark there. Well, supernatural models handle this problem quite easily. An object only some 10 feet above the ground can move and guide, as pictured in the Gospel of Matthew. The terminology used in the Greek translation of the Old Testament, what we call a Septuagint or the LXX, for Israel's guidance by the pillar of fire and cloud in the wilderness is really quite similar to the terminology used by Matthew in his account of the Magi. So we have this dilemma. The purely natural explanation gives a strong apologetic, but doesn't handle the guidance. The purely supernatural explanation provides the guidance, but the conjunctions are just a fluke, however strange or rare. It seems to me that hybrid is the best alternative because it preserves the apologetic value and it also preserves the match with Matthew's statement, huh? So my proposal looks like this. Matthew 2, 9, and 10 identifies the guiding star, the star that went before them, with the star they saw in the east. If they arrive in Jerusalem around 28 August 2 BC, then the cluster of planets will set with the sun, actually just ahead of the sun. Suppose the Magi see a supernatural light about the size, brightness, and color of the 17 June conjunction. It rises from the west where the sun has just set and comes toward them until it's low overhead. Then it turns south and guides them to the house where Mary and Joseph and Jesus are. So my proposal looks like this, comes up, stops overhead, and then leads them slowly southward to Bethlehem and to the house. Well, that's my proposal. My proposal is speculative and not likely to be testable in this life, but handles both the biblical text and the astronomical data fairly. It also fits a theme of the Gospel of Matthew here, that of Jesus' birth drawing outsiders to come and worship him. Maybe it still does. Maybe it not only draws the Magi 2,000 years ago, but it also draws those who will run this on their planetarium program and see the strikingly close conjunction and see the symbolism of the conjunctions around it. So, my suggestion, the Star of Bethlehem is a testimony to the nations, drawing these Gentile Magi from hundreds of miles away, but it's also a testimony to the ages. It has left a mark in history that is reconstructable by electronic computers that points to Jesus from 2,000 years away. Well, I trust that you will think this through and examine it and go where the evidence guides you.